Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I hope that we're all going to do good works as a result of this hour and hear about kindness as well. This article caught our attention. It was in the New York Times Sunday Review, March 14. One morning, December of 2012, at the drive-thru window of a Tim Hortons coffee shop in Winnipeg, Manitoba, a customer paid for her order and then picked up the tab for the stranger behind her in line. And then that customer paid the bill for the following and so on and so on for the next 226 customers in a three-hour sequence of spontaneous generosities. So how about a single act of kindness? What effect can it have? Can it ripple through a social network? And what about witnessing a generous act or benefiting from a generous act? Our guests this hour have done some interesting studies on this, and essentially they find that the next time you stop to help a stranger, you might be helping not only one individual, but potentially many others. Who knows, in the end, what goes around comes around, and you may be rewarded yourself. What I'm interested in hearing from you this hour are when you have done pay it forward, when you've done acts of kindness for a stranger, and when you've benefited from that as well. I just thought we could hear some great stories and we'll be ever so uplifted, and then we'll all be kind by the end of this hour. Our phone number for you to join our conversation is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, The Science of Paying It Forward, this hour of the program. Professor Michael Macy is with us, professor of arts and sciences at Cornell University, director of the Social Dynamics Laboratory there. And also Milena Svetkova is with us, and she is a student. She is joining us by phone from some other country today. Where is she? She's in... We're not sure. We'll find out. Michael Macy, thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Kathleen, for inviting me. Milena is in Sweden, in Stockholm.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you. I wasn't sure where she was. Milena in Stockholm, hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Kathleen. Hello from Stockholm.
Yes, hello. And we have all four phone lines going, even before you said a word. So this is terrific. So tell me about the study you did. Well, first, let's start with that, the way that you start the New York Times article. That is incredible that 226 people did the same thing. One would think that would never happen, Michael.
Well, so apparently that's actually no longer the record holder. At Chick-fil-A apparently has now topped the Tim Hortons in their chain. I'm not quite sure how many went, how many cars paid it forward, but apparently the chain continued until they simply ran out of customers.
Unbelievable. So why did that happen?
Well, we are investigating two possible explanations. One is based on the idea of reciprocity, but instead of the reciprocity being to pay it back to the person who helped you, the reciprocity is generalized. So we call it generalized reciprocity. It's to go to anyone whom you find that might need help, including a complete stranger. So that's one mechanism, just good old-fashioned reciprocity. You know, somebody did something for me, so I feel like
right.
I should pay it back.
Uh-huh.
The other mechanism that we look at is sort of, you could think of it as imitation. You observe somebody doing this, and you think, ah, that was really cool. I'm going to do the same thing. And, in fact, maybe your show today is going to be along the lines of that second mechanism where your listeners are going to hear about this, and then maybe they'll be motivated to go try it themselves.
Oh, I would hope so. That's why we're doing the hour, right?
I hope so, too.
Yeah, it is. So you put together this study, and tell me what it was. You recruited 600 participants to be engaged in a study so you could look at this. Who were they? What were they doing?
Milena, do you want to talk a little bit about that, the design, and also maybe the listeners might be interested to know something about Amazon Mechanical Turk?
Yes, absolutely. So we recruited the participants from, as Michael mentioned, Amazon Mechanical Turk. This is an online crowdsourcing platform. So this is a space where certain users post small jobs to be done, usually in the order of a few minutes, for a very small payment, less than a dollar usually, and other users do the jobs. And so this platform has become very popular with social scientists in particular, and we used it to do our study. So we recruited, as you mentioned, 600 participants, and we spread them, we assigned them to four different groups, each of 150 persons. And we asked them to participate in what we called the invitation game. So this was a game where they could participate and make money in the order of $1 to $3 only if they're invited, only if they receive an email invitation. And the key thing here was that those who received invitations could create invitations.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a kind of a self-generating process. And we started the experiment with a few invitations that we, the researchers, assigned. But then, as I mentioned, those who received invitations could return part of their payment, so to basically get less money and pay it forward. And we then would select some other random participant out of the 150 in their group, and they would get this invitation and get the same opportunity to basically create an invitation for somebody else for a small amount of money.
And Michael, what did you find?
Well, the interesting thing was that we found that the effect of invitation was a little bit disappointing. So I'll say there's good news and bad news
All
from
right.
the standpoint of pay it forward. The good news is that people did pay it forward, but they paid it forward when they were a beneficiary of somebody else's generosity.
Mm.
But what we were wondering is if maybe imitation would also work, because after all, only one person is being the beneficiary of a given act of generosity, but very large numbers of people potentially could observe it. And so the thing could spread much faster if it would work through imitation. But the bad news is that imitation actually backfires. So what we found is that when you observe other people paying it forward, there's something that social psychologists call the bystander effect, or sometimes people call it free riding. It's the attitude of, you know, let George do it. There's enough people doing this. Why do they need me? So at low level of observing others, then there was a positive effect. People were more likely to pay it forward. But if they observed more widespread generosity, then they would slack off and let others do it. And it had a negative effect. But then one last thing that we found, which was really encouraging, and that is if you were a beneficiary of somebody else's generosity, it neutralized the bystander effect. So
oh.
the bystander effect only operated for people who were just pure observers. But if you were both a beneficiary and an observer, then because you were a beneficiary, this bystander effect did not kick in.
Hmm. And have you looked at all at the nature of the kindness? If you have to do this at some risk to yourself, some personal risk to yourself, are we less likely to engage in paying it forward?
That's a great question, and I think that's an important question for future research. How big a cost are people willing to pay?
Mm-hmm.
On the flip side, there's also a much more powerful positive incentive to pay it forward that we also did not explore. And in future research, we're both really interested in examining something that we call branching. And that's really a good name for it, because what we're talking about here is not just having one person that you pay it forward to, but having it branch so that when you are the beneficiary, you then pay it forward to two people or maybe three people instead of just one. So when you think about the Tim Hortons drive-through, there's no branching there because there's just one drive-through line. So you have to think about a situation in which you receive help, and now you could help two people, which is more like what you saw in the movie Pay It Forward, the Kevin Spacey movie a few years ago, where the idea was to have it branch out. It's really interesting how with just a very small branching effect, it takes relatively few steps for very large numbers of people to be touched by the process.
Yeah.
So we haven't looked at that yet, and I think that has the potential to be a very positive and powerful that might, when the cost itself of being generous goes up.
Malena, let me go to you. It's interesting that you're joining us from Sweden. You're visiting the Institute for Future Studies. You are a PhD candidate in sociology at Cornell. Have you noticed just in your everyday life any cultural differences here? Would you say that you've seen more acts of paying it forward in Sweden than you have in the United States? Would this study hold as true in Sweden, do you imagine?
Very hard to say. And one common thing when we observe acts of kind of charity on the street is homeless people. But I must say that there are not that many homeless people in Stockholm.
Right.
So I have not observed personally any of that. But I know from statistics that Swedish people do put a lot of voluntary labor into non-profit organizations and charities, and that a lot of them also donate to charities.
We're going to welcome phone calls. We have many, many people who want to speak to this. Paying it forward, we hear of examples of this, and I am particularly interested in their reciprocal acts of kindness, because it is true when you think about it, times, perhaps difficult times in your life, when people have done extraordinary acts of kindness for you, and how it makes you really think later on about doing acts of kindness for other people. I really believe that there's something to this. If you receive kindness, that you're more likely to spread the kindness in your own life. Paying it forward. Have you done this? Maybe you know of some fabulous instances of this. Has somebody done this for you? And then how did you respond in kind? What happens if you see many, many people engaged in an act of kindness and paying it forward? If there are too many people, does it make you hold back? Here's our phone number, and we have one line open right now, 800-486-8655. Our guests have been studying the science of paying it forward. Professor Michael Macy, Professor of Arts and Sciences at Cornell University, Director of the Social Dynamics Laboratory, is with us this hour. And we're also speaking with a student who's a PhD candidate in sociology at Cornell University and co-author of the piece that we mentioned that is in the New York Times, which also is on our Facebook page. Malena Svetkova is with us from Stockholm today. So, to your phone calls momentarily. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Paying it forward this hour, and let us go to our full bank of phone calls, starting with Jolene in Evansville. Hi, Jolene.
Hi. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I would just like to say that I was a recipient of a Pay It Forward. I was at the grocery store with my daughter at the time, and I had put a bunch of baby food up on the belt, and the woman ahead of me, she was kind of lingering around. She didn't take her groceries and go. And when the clerk gave me my total, the woman in front of me slid her debit card through the register and told me to have a good day.
What did you say to her?
I was speechless. I as she's walking away, I told her, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And, she just kept on walking. So.
And did it, Jolene, make you more likely to do something like that yourself?
Yes. I have, in fact, done that twice to other people that have been behind me in line. And also, very similar to the study of, the coffee shop and anytime I treat myself to the coffee shop, I always pay for the person behind me.
You do? Oh.
Yeah.
Very nice. And what about the motivation of the woman who paid for the baby food? Is this kind of a spontaneous decision on somebody's part, Michael, or is it a code that they live by and they try to do so many acts of kindness every day or every week? What prompts somebody to do that?
Well, one possibility is that the person who was in front of her who paid for the baby food had been in a toll booth and somebody paid the toll in front of her, or at a Tim Hortons or a drive-through restaurant and somebody had paid her tab. So it could just be that she was just another link in one of these chains. These chains are a lot harder to measure because they're not connected physically in the same way that a drive-thru would be, and we can measure how many cars, and yet those chains could still be operating. Your listener, Jolene, mentioned that she had paid it forward in several instances, and that's a good example of what we mean by branching, where a single act then reverberates and affects not just one more person, but it affects two or three or four more people, each of whom then impacts two or three or four. And sit down and do the arithmetic on that. You're going to see that it does not take very many steps in a chain like that before you have touched the lives of a very large number of people.
That's true, isn't it? Thank you, Jolene, so much for your call. Nice to hear from you. Dean in Manitowoc, hi.
Hi, how are you today?
Fine, how are you, Dean?
I'm well. I wanted to share a story with you. Growing up in Manitowoc, we went to the parochial schools. I've always had a special spot for the sisters that staffed and taught at the schools. We also in Manitowoc have a Franciscan Order of Sisters. And the thing I like to do, and I started this since I've left and been out on my own many years, when I'm at a market or a discount store, Shopko, Walmart, whatever, if I see a sister or sisters approaching behind me in line, I always leave. I'll slide $10 or $15 ahead to the cashier and say, put this toward there, and I just disappear. I don't want the awkwardness for them, and I don't want the awkwardness for me. So they were such an influence in my life growing up that that's one particular group that I like to surprise.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. Thank you very much for the call. I usually am a very trusting soul, but I must ask the question because I've heard somebody ask this before. How do you know for sure that clerk is going to use the money to give to the sister instead of just taking the money? Does that ever happen, Michael?
Well, I'm sure that it there's a potential for it. I would like to think that that's fairly rare. But Dean's example is really an interesting one. It introduces a sort of hybrid case where there's both the standard kind of pay it back where somebody helps you and you feel obligated to help back. But in Dean's case, he's helping members of a group that helped him.
Right.
But not the same individuals within the group who helped him. So that really gives me an idea for another experiment that Milena and I might try at some point in the future, where we compare what happens when the person that you can pay it forward to is a member of the same group who helped you versus they're an out-group member. They're not a member of that same group. And to what extent does the connection between the person who helped you and the person that you might help, to what extent does that social connection, such as membership in a Catholic order, but it could be a membership in, it could be a school alum from University of Wisconsin.
Sure.
It could be any group. Does that help to couple the idea that we want to help somebody back who helped us, but in this case, it's not the same individual, it's just members of the same group.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks, Dean. That was really an interesting case and gives me an idea for a future experiment.
Oh, you got experiment upon experiment, I'm sure, from many people. Melina, what are the more remarkable stories that you've heard about Pay It Forward? You mentioned a couple of them in the article, but you've probably seen or heard since the doing your research and the publication of the article about many extraordinary acts of paying it forward.
It's always nice to hear from readers or listeners about their own stories, and I think they all are kind of contributing to our study and reinforcing what we found. So I had a friend, actually, who who read the article, and he commented that that's kind of going to the other mechanism where you observe generosity or helping. And he mentioned that when he's at the beach, he always picks up trash at the beach and makes sure that there are others that who can see him. And the reason is this kind of third-party influence, this idea that if others see you doing that, they're more likely to do it themselves. So if you do it by yourself and nobody's there to see you, your act has much less influence than others observe it. So yeah, that was one interesting story.
All right, so make sure you have people watching you doing that, then they're more likely to do it. Matt is next in Minnesota. Hello, Matt.
Hi. I've got a quick little story for you guys, but I always live my life by the rule, kind of getting 3 leaves returned 1,000-fold. Well, about 3 years ago, I helped this young couple. They're stuck on the side of the road in a rainstorm trying to get the Red Cross and, you know, get a place to stay for the night. So I picked them up, got them there, made sure they were safe and everything else. Well, about 2 years later, I ran into my own financial hard times, and this church group came out of the blue that we were part of and helped us out. When I went to thank them, sure enough, who's part of the group that was helping them out, and they didn't even know they were helping me, was that young couple.
Oh, my goodness.
And it literally turned 360 all the way back around to me in the pay it forward scale.
And you had you didn't see that coming at all. You had no idea.
No idea at all, so.
Well, there's a case in point when you conclude your article, but who knows in the end what goes around will come around. That's how you end this article, Michael. So maybe it's not all that unusual, huh?
I suppose if these chains get long enough, then there's that possibility that it comes back to you. And one of the conditions in our experiment is that we had a group that was, in fact, small enough that it was not able, that by keeping the chain going, you increase the chance that it comes back to help you in the end.
And what about, we've talked about restaurants where you're in a drive-in place. Have you looked at all kinds of pay-it-forward? People have been talking about, you know, taking care of somebody who's stuck on the side of the road. Is there some act of paying it forward that is more monumental or memorable or more likely to make you do something than others?
Yeah, I think that helping the stranded motorist is one of the iconic examples that's out there in our culture that we think about. I think lots of people have had that experience of a flat tire. They have the hood up, somebody stops to help them, and then maybe at some point in the future they have the opportunity to help somebody else who's by the side of the road, or maybe they need a lift to get gas for their car that's run out of gas or whatever. So, yes, I think the stranded motorist is a very common example and one of the better ones. I should also add that there is the dark side to this process. We haven't talked about that.
All right.
I think it's an interesting alternative take on this. There's the dark side of paying it forward. I guess we could call it paying it backward. So, you know, reciprocity can work both ways. Somebody helps me, I want to help them back. What about when somebody hurts me? Do I want to hurt them back?
Mm.
And you asked the question a moment ago about the grocery store clerk who might just keep the money. We had this experience from time to time. Somebody takes something from us. What happens then? Do we then have the tendency to want to pay back, if you will, rather than pay forward that harm? So Milena and I recently ran an experiment on this pay-it-backward dynamic, and actually we did find that there was a tendency to reciprocate negatively as well, that is to say to pass along a harm to others having received it.
And would that be specific to the person who did you harm or just a general harmful action to anybody?
Well, in this case, interestingly enough, we found that the mechanism that was underlying the tendency to pay the harm back, if you will, was not the
being the recipient of harm. It was the observation of others doing it.
Oh.
So whereas it was being the recipient that affected the generosity side, it was the observing that affected the passing along the harm version of the story.
Mm. Let's go next to Simon in Waukesha. Hi, Simon.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking the call. But the question I had was, could this approach or this philosophy be used to look at models, say, for business management, something a little bit more longer term than the short-term change that you talk about at restaurants? And I guess the gist of the approach is, you know, surrounding yourself with good people and then trying to get them promoted and hoping that that will have a similar long-term effect on their approach within a corporate environment.
Hmm. Melina, what do you say?
Yeah, I think the applications of basically our study or our findings are pretty wide. And one is definitely the kind of the corporate environment or the office environment. And I'm even more thinking about even in, as a kind of a, the office environment, everyday environment, that you could imagine this kind of good deeds bouncing back within an office. For long-term strategies, I haven't thought about it. I'm not sure. Maybe Michael has an idea.
Michael, what do you think?
Well, certainly any environment that involves cooperation among members of a large organization, you need to have some kind of generalized reciprocity operating, simply because the organization is large. If it's a small team, 5-10 people, then it's not so important, because the cooperation is such that I help the person next to me on the team, they help me back, or they help somebody else on the team who immediately helps me back. But what about a really large group of hundreds of people? There, you cannot rely so easily on this direct, we call it dyadic reciprocity, where A helps B, B helps A, or maybe even A helps B, B helps C, C helps A. Now, it's a big enough group that people really have to be prepared to help somebody, even when the chance that what goes around comes around is much, much lower, simply because of a large group. So as your business gets larger or your organization gets larger, the importance of this generalized phenomena, where it's not just helping the person who helped you, then it becomes more important.
Mm-hmm. Let's go next to Q in Madison. Hello. Hello. All right, let's go to Steve in Madison. Hello, Steve.
Hi. I have a little story. I don't know how remarkable it is, but it's made an impression on my life since it happened 40 years ago.
Oh.
I was, as a young man in my early 20s, hitchhiking out west, and I landed in L.A. and was sort of reconnoitering in MacArthur Park trying to figure out what I was going to do. And a young man came up to me and said that he had just gotten out of prison 3 days before and that he hadn't eaten since then, and could I help him out? And I had $4 in my pocket, which in those days was enough to, you could probably buy a lunch for a buck and a half or $2. And I said, well, I've got $4. I'll give you two. And so I did. And then I went into a diner and had some lunch. And then after lunch, went over to the park and sort of put my pack down and laid down on the grass and put my head on the pack to sort of rest and figure out what I was going to do. And I was sort of half dozing when I heard footsteps rapidly running up towards me and running past me. And in the course of running past me, something dropped on my pack just behind my head. And I got up and looked, and it was money. Somebody I didn't even see or couldn't tell who they were, had run past me and dropped. I don't remember the amount now. It was well more than the $2 that I had given to the recently released prisoner. But I want to say it was probably $10, maybe $20.
Oh my goodness!
And ever since then, you know, it's reaffirmed for me that, you know, there is such a thing as karma, and good karma, you know, the more you can put it out, the better. So I, you know, when I'm in Chicago and a homeless person asks me for money, I try to give something no matter what. So That's my story.
Thank you, Steve. Isn't it something that people remember these? He's remembering this, Michael, 40 years later. Michael? Can you hear me, Michael? No, I think we've lost our connection with Michael. Can you hear me? Milena?
Yes, I'm over.
Okay, good. It's interesting that he remembers all of this 40 years later.
Yeah, I think his story is pretty remarkable, actually, and no wonder that he does. And I think that sometimes stories like that can really change your whole attitude.
Yes.
Towards, giving money to charity or helping others.
Let's go next to Chris in the Wisconsin Dells. Hi, Chris.
Good afternoon. I did a really good act of kindness, and I'll tell you about that. And what I've realized about life is that you go through life and people do wonderful things for you, and when you have the opportunity, you have a responsibility to pay back. What happened to me was I lost my house to foreclosure by a Gestapo attorney, and among the things he did to me is he told one of my tenants that she should stop paying the rent. And what she did with that money was she went out to all the finest Milwaukee stores and bought a bunch of clothes, and he told her that she wasn't going to get evicted. Well, that's not what happened. She was arrogant enough to believe him, and she didn't pack the stuff up, and it was left in her apartment. And it became legally available to me, and so I went and picked it all up, and I put it out at a rummage sale. And a woman got off the bus. Now, it still had the tags on it and everything, and it was still in the original bags. A woman got off the bus dragging two little kids, and she came up, and she looked through the pile of clothes, and she said, "Where did you get these?" And I told her my tale of woe and intrigue. And she said, "Well, I just got my first job. I have to go back to work. I've been on welfare for 5 years. My kids are in school now, and I went and put myself through legal tech school, but I only have one suit and one pair of shoes and one purse, which I wore to all the interviews. I just got a job at a lawyer firm this week, and I have to dress." And she said, how much do you want for them? And I said, $1 apiece. And she said, "You got to be kidding me." And I said, "No." I said, "But there's a caveat. When you get yourself established, you have to convince those lawyers in that firm to take a case for somebody like me pro bono so that that person doesn't lose their house."
Oh.
I went and got a big bag. I put the stuff in it. I gave her a hug, and she went on her way.
And you have to assume that she probably kept her word. There's a story, huh, Michael?
Yeah, that's a great story. And in fact, there is other research beyond what we've done. We call them observational studies. These were not experiments. These were measuring behaviors. There's a classic study that was done by Nicholas Christakis and James Fowler a few years ago. And they studied helping behavior and generosity and its contagious properties. They also studied the contagiousness of other things, such as physical fitness. They studied the contagiousness of voting behavior. So if I go out to the polls and vote, does it increase the chances that other people will vote? And then across all, they also studied obesity, not just fitness, but also the flip side of a weight gain. They found out that that's contagious. So both positive and negative things can be contagious, just as we found in both our pay it forward and our pay it backward versions of the experiment. But here's an interesting theme that runs through all these contagion stories in the Christakis and Fowler studies. It seems that there's this 3 degrees principle that they have noticed in these contagions. And it goes like this. It means that let's take the example of helping behavior, which they studied. If I help someone, then I will not only help that friend of mine that I've helped, but I will help a friend of that friend, a friend of the friend of that friend, and a friend of the friend of the friend of that friend out 3 degrees.
Uh-huh.
So we should keep that in mind when we're helping others, but hey, we should also keep it in mind when we do something that's not so nice, because we're also risking the possibility that those things will also spread out to what Christakis and Fowler called 3 degrees of influence.
Yeah. Thanks very much, Chris, for your call. Let's go to Brad in Campbellsport. Hi, Brad.
Hi. I actually have 2 quick stories about karma that went south. The first one happened once I was taking a load of scrap paper into a company, and I should have gotten maybe $4 to $12. And the cashier pushed hundreds of dollars at me. This is back when they just paid in cash. I said, oh, that can't be my load. It must have been for like a semi-truckload of steel or something. And she looked again and gave me $4 and didn't say thanks for saving her butt or anything, you know. So I walked away from that feeling kind of disappointed. And then a number of years later, in front of a casino down in the Quad Cities, we were visiting a historical site next to it. My wife and my two little baby quarter children, you know, and I saw in the parking lot a bank envelope that had $485 and a driver's license in it.
Ooh.
I thought, wow, somebody must be going to the casino. I went into the casino. I showed the driver's license to the security people. She must have been a frequent customer or something because I knew exactly who it was. They said, oh, we'll get her. They got her. She took the money. And all I got out of that was a thank you. And, you know, my wife said, oh, I'm surprised you didn't go in the bathroom, flush the license on the toilet, and walk out with the money because I could have used it.
What did you expect? What did you think you should have received?
Well, I should have got something other than a thank you. There should have been some kind of a monetary, you know, my gosh, I actually found her driver's license. That's got to be worth something.
Yeah. Wait, Michael, what do you think?
Well, you know, I wonder if the fact that she did not reciprocate in this case means that she also might not be someone who would pay it forward the next time. That is to say, suppose now a year later or even a week later, she found something that somebody had left behind. Maybe it's not $400. Maybe she just saw that somebody in front of her walking down the sidewalk dropped her glove or a hat or something, and she would have the option to run after them and give it back. And one wonders if, well, maybe this was one of those people who won't pay it forward, and she would just, you know, keep the thing that she found rather than doing what your listener did and trying to get this back to the person who lost it. Not everybody is willing to be so generous, and not everyone feels this feeling of obligation to reciprocate when one benefits from something. But then also keep in mind, there's the flip side. Not everybody feels like they have to retaliate when somebody hurts them either.
Right. Well, and you have to think at some point, don't you, Melena, that Brad, if he's a moral guy, would have felt pretty badly if he didn't even try to find out who the money belonged to. Wouldn't you feel fairly guilty about having somebody's driver's license and 470 or however much money and you just sort of pocketed?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I just wanted to repeat, as Michael said, that there are different kinds of people. And some of them are what we would call altruists, so people that regardless of what happens to them would always be willing to
right.
help others. And these people are important in society. They're probably the ones that often start these chains of generosity. There are other people that are susceptible to influence. People that who are willing to pay it forward or are influenced by others' generosity. And these are probably the people that maintain these chains of generosity or start their own or make this branching possible. And then, of course, there are people who just are egoistic and are neither susceptible nor willing to be helpful in any circumstances.
Yeah.
And there is not that much we can do about those people.
Thanks, Brad, very much for your call. We have one line open if you'd like to join the conversation. You can also email us. Maybe we could have some emails, too. That's good. That'd be good. talk@wpr.org. Or yeah, you can also leave, because these would be fun for us all to read on our Facebook page, Pay It Forward, things that you've done or that you know about. And then we can all do this sometime today or tomorrow, the next day, and see what happens. I don't want to be too Pollyanna-ish, but, you know, there's something to be said for kindness. There's a lot to be said for kindness. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter @KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go back to phone calls. We're talking about Pay It Forward. The article that we've been referring to is in the New York Times, and it's on our Facebook page, The Science of Paying It Forward. It was a March 14 Sunday review in the New York Times, and the authors of the piece, a doctoral candidate in sociology and a professor of sociology from Cornell University, are our guests. And let's go to our next caller, Doc Shaw. Hi, Doc Shaw.
Hi, Kathleen. It's wonderful to speak with you.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say this about paying it forward. This for me, there's two sides to this. So what I've always tried to do is I have two children. And whenever I can set an example for them to see how to help others out, I do that. And not in a very obvious manner. There was one time, about a couple of years ago, I was in the Janesville Mall at an Orange Julius stand, and, I saw four Marines, very young men standing there. And I went to the back of the counter, and I paid for their food. Didn't want them to know or anything. However, somehow they found out. And they came over to our table and thanked us and everything, and my children were just shocked. And they said, Mom, did you pay for their food? And I said, yes. I said, I wanted to do something for them because they do so much for us. But those are the sort of examples that I always try to set, because I think as growing up as a child in Africa, even though we weren't well off, my parents always set examples like that, always. And so I want to do that. But the other thing that I try to do is also the power of social media is immense. And a couple of months ago, I read an article on suspended coffees on Facebook. And I thought, wow, this is a neat idea. You know, you go into a coffee shop, and if they have this suspended coffee program, you purchase coffees or soups or food in advance for somebody else who really needs a warm cup of soup or a meal. They come in and they ask the shop owner, can I have a suspended soup? And it's free to them.
Oh.
Nobody knows their identity. They don't know mine. You give people their dignity and everything.
Right.
So what I decided to do was I thought, you know what, I'm going to post this on the local Janesville community Facebook page.
Oh.
And I just posted it on there and said, wouldn't this be nice if we could do something like this in this area? There's so many people that could use this. Well, a local coffee shop called The Little Bean read that article, and they jumped right on it.
Oh.
And
so now
before you knew it, they were so thankful. I mean, they and they're a new business. So what ended up happening was not only did they get recognition as a new business, but they were doing something good for people that really needed it. And it turns out that over the weekend, there was lines of people.
Really? Oh, isn't
and
that?
I called in and they said, will you come in and we'll give you a meal on us? And I said, no, never. I said, I want to put $15 towards the suspended coffee, and I want that to, go towards whoever comes in and needs it. So we've got veterans, we've got, since the GM plant closed, there's a lot of people that don't have any food and that.
Right.
So I just wanted to say that it's important to remember that we should do these acts in front of young people so they can see they have an example to go by.
Yeah, thank you, Doc Shaw, so much for your call. There's a great story, huh, Michael?
It is a great story. And her last point about doing this in front of young people, that's very much this idea of the imitation effect that we were studying. We wanted to see to what extent does observing the helping behavior have the same impact as being a recipient of helping behavior. And what we found, as I mentioned before, is that it does work when you don't observe too much of it. So and that's the part that's a little bit discouraging, that if you see too many people helping, it seems to have a negative effect. You sort of take it for granted. Well, we don't need me to do it. But I think that her point about letting the child see this one instance is a good example of role modeling and this imitation process that could also be really important in sustaining these contagious behaviors of helping.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Dr. Shaw, for your call. Terry in Pewaukee is next. Hi, Terry.
I'm really enjoying this program. I just had to tell a story. Shortly after Christmas, my son, who is a college student, was returning from a weekend in Chicago by train up to Milwaukee. and it was an evening train, and he then went to the grocery store and realized he did not have his wallet, and he was just in a panic. He lost several hundred dollars and credit cards, ID, all of that.
Yeah.
He did call Amtrak and left his information, but he figured it was pretty well lost. He received a phone call the next day, and they said that a conductor had found his wallet, and he went down to the train station to meet the conductor when the train came in. This was a train from Chicago to Milwaukee again. And he met with the conductor. He received the wallet back with everything in it. And the conductor had looked at his ID and saw that my son was a high school football coach. So he talked a little bit about that. They chatted for a while, and the conductor said that he had a similar experience on a golf course several years earlier, where he had lost his wallet and it was returned with everything intact, and he was paying it forward. Left quite a good impression on my son, and he was just so pleased to be able to tell that story.
That's great. Thank you so much. Thanks for the call. Let's go to this email, I don't know who it's from. I recently lost a baby, this person writes, and was helped in my grief by a foundation that was created by a mom who also lost a baby. In starting this organization, not only did this woman pay it forward, but she was also able to work through her own grief in a way that was most profound and effective. So paying it forward can also be a type of therapy for people. This organization and the people who have walked alongside me and my family during this difficult time have inspired me to do the same. I've seen a lot of that. People who have cancer, who are in support groups for other people who have similar kinds of diagnoses. That's a wonderful pay it forward, isn't it, Milena?
Yes, absolutely. I think that this kind of thankfulness, generalized gratitude, stands behind a lot of foundations out there. And actually, recently, the New York Times, there was an article about privately funded research. And in a lot of the cases, behind a lot of these extremely wealthy people putting in a lot of money into, say, cancer research or or space exploration and so on, there was always a kind of a personal story of either getting help to cure cancer and so on. So I think that this is one way to pay it forward, is by actually founding an organization that deals with that, or donating, for example, to universities, another example.
Mm-hmm. Mike is next in La Crosse, and we're getting short on time. Hi, Mike.
Hello. Yeah, I'll make it quick. I like to pay it forward by just quick comments here. First, La Crosse, we have three rivers that meet. I'm paying it forward by saying this is a beautiful city in downtown at Riverside Park. We have the La Crosse River, the Black, and the Mississippi. They just like to see something beautiful and just to simplify that's just nice here in La Crosse. And second of all, you know, if other listeners talk about this word karma. There's a couple different definitions in dictionaries that the karma has nothing to do with the here and now. It's in the hereafter. Not that I believe in karma. I believe in my faith. So, and it's just, they need to look the definition up to understand what karma really means.
Okay, thanks for the call. Cynthia in Menominee Falls, hi.
Hi. I was traveling one year at 2:30 in the morning on Christmas Eve to be home with family and had a little time before the train left, so I stopped into a Walgreens to pick up a few things, and there was a gentleman at the counter counting out a stack of pennies on the counter with the cashier, and I picked up on the fact that this was the only money that he had to buy gifts for his family the next day.
Mm.
Looked across at the cashier and kind of got the nod that, yeah, this was really for real.
Mm.
And I didn't have much, but be able to leave $20 to $40 for him and the look on his face.
Mm.
I remember the times when I was a single mom and had no money to buy anything for my daughter for Christmas. It was the best part of that year.
Yeah, I'll bet it was. Yeah, forever to be remembered. Thank you for the call. Michael and Milena, thank you so much. You just have created quite a stir here. I'm glad you wrote the article.
Thank you very much, Kathleen, for having us on.
Yeah, our pleasure. Michael Macy, professor of arts and sciences at Cornell University, director of the Social Dynamics Laboratory. Milena Svetkova is a PhD candidate in sociology at Cornell, currently at the Institute for Futures Studies in Stockholm, Sweden. Thanks to K.P. Whaley for producing this show, and thanks to K.P. as well for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. And we'll be with you again tomorrow. Great conversations ahead. Join us tomorrow from 1 until 3. Thank you for listening today.